Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Sooner or later, everyone sits down to a banquet of their consequences. From novelist Robert Louis Stevenson. Welcome to Grimley.
All right, now you can see, we are recording. Can you see that?
I can, yeah.
Usually I have it turned away from you. I like to sneak it up and like, oh, by the way, sorry.
It's always a mystery. What?
I'm like, what was I saying at the beginning of this bullshit?
When we started.
I feel like I'm pretty fair. I never like do anything crazy or egregious.
No, of course
yeah,
not.
Yeah. I'm not like a complete asshole.
Record me without my consent?
Record you without your consent? Yeah, that is definitely a thing that fucking some people would do. Like Ken McElroy.
No. I was like, are we going there?
If this bitch had an opportunity, you know he fucking would. Yeah. Anyways, this is Grimley.
Welcome to Grimley.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. It's been a busy week, but you know, yeah. Getting there. Like, I'm going backpacking for the first trip this weekend, so.
First of the season.
Yes, first one of the season.
Oh, it's been such a nice springtime.
Honestly, so we're going to Chelan.
Oh, cool.
We're taking the ferry from Lake Chelan to Stehekin.
Bitch.
Have you ever been?
No, but like it's on our list.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, what yeah. You? But I can't hike because I'm my best at all.
Right, right, but like you could have gone to Stehekin.
Well, Dave and I will go to Stehekin or like we'll plan something one of these days. But yes, cool. All right, I'm very excited.
Yeah, so we're
So that's why you're going for 3 days.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Jane, one of my friends.
Hey, shout out Jane.
Shout out Jane. She has a broken foot or broken esque foot in this moment. So we're
she
like,
does?
She like fucked up one of her toes or something. Or
she's
she like,
hiking?
No, she is hiking. She like, she went to the urgent care. They like cleared her. They're like, your foot isn't fractured. She just like has some weird pain.
Well,
so we're
careful.
Like modifying the trip a little bit.
I'm a little concerned as a recent.
Person who's
injured
like, person
like that went to like not an amazing doctor the first time.
Yeah,
well, it's too late.
I mean, she got like a strip x-ray though.
So did I.
Like a radiologist like looked
my
at
second doctor. Yep, also I'm
okay
right.
Fuck. Well, this is coming out 2 weeks, so she doesn't know. I mean, but
Jane,
like
I hope you have a great time.
Yeah,
it's
no matter what, if she's not comfortable, we're not going to force her to hike. Like, we can just stay around Stehekin.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean,
that's going to be amazing.
It will be fun. Yeah, logistically, just getting everything together. I'm just getting everything together and, like, getting prepared and, like, going through my gear and making everything, sure, everything is, like, good.
Because
It's been, like, a year since I looked at it.
Sure.
You know, just
okay.
Getting ready.
Okay.
But, yeah, so, and then doing the research for this episode.
Yes,
turned out to be
two.
Way more than I expected, which is why we are having a part two.
Part two of the story of
Ken McElroy.
McElroy.
Fuck! I knew I was going to do that. His name is spelled McElroy, which is McElroy.
McElroy.
Not McElroy.
Yay, McElroy.
Anyways, it's annoying. I'll probably say it wrong again at some point. For sure. But yeah. So we're at part two. Do we want to do a recap? We probably should, right? Of like what we talked about originally.
Do you want me to try?
You want to do it? I trust you. I believe in you.
What's the name of the town again?
Skidmore.
Skidmore. Listen, I don't want to be disrespectful to Skidmore, but it does make me think of a toilet.
What?
Anyway, 1888, a town in Missouri.
This is when it was founded.
Yep. And then eventually this guy named Ken McElroy was born there.
Mm-hmm.
Grew up there just tormenting the town, raping, pillaging, with a shitty lawyer who was really good at getting him out of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Is about to get what's coming to him.
Probably.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Not as-
his big thing. So I think big thing that he had, his concept was no witness, no case. That's kind of the thing he kind of always
the
like.
The lawyer.
No. Ken.
Ken and the lawyer. The team.
Yeah. His fucking lawyer's piece of shit. Definitely. Richard.
Yeah, he was a witness intimidation.
Yes.
Theft.
Like, just wreaking havoc on a fucking tiny dot of a town that has like 400 people in it.
Tormenting people.
Yeah. Threatening.
Yes.
Playing just guns at people's faces.
A menace. Was
killing
a terrible...
fucking dogs. Burning houses down.
Yes.
Absolute fucking monster.
Monster. All right. So where were we most recently? Maybe give us just like the most.
Yeah. So the most recent thing we talked about in our last episode was Ken attacking a local farmer named Romaine Henry.
Okay. He shot him in the stomach.
Romaine was able to survive. He got off because
he did. He pulled the usual.
Got a couple appeals. Like the case was drawn out. He threatened Romaine and his family. Romaine eventually just like dropped all the charges and like kind of like walked away because he was worried for his own safety and his family's safety.
Okay.
So now I'm going to a specific date. April 25th, 1980.
Okay.
So Tammy Sue, which is perfect name, is Ken's oldest daughter.
Okay.
I think Sharon is his mom.
Okay.
So Tammy Sue took two of Ken's other younger daughters into town, 14-year-old Debbie and 4-year-old Alita. And they went to a local B&B grocery where Debbie bought some cookies, a pack of cigarettes at 14, doesn't seem right, and a candy bar.
Okay.
I don't know if the pack of cigarettes were for the 14-year-old Debbie or if they were for her parents. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping they were for her parents.
Okay, sure. I know. If it's cigarettes, it's not the worst thing that 14-year-old's ever done.
It's still not good.
No. I'm just like, we can't be hung up on this 14-year-old buying cigarettes just yet.
Be a 14-year-old smoker, please.
But back then, like, you know.
Yeah, in the 80s, yeah. I mean,
yeah, she might have been.
Fucking everyone smoked. Everyone smoked and did cocaine. It was like
just.
It's not great. Yeah.
We're not shaming her about it. But hopefully they were her parents for the sake of her lungs.
It's just, it's such a weird like juxtaposition of things bought, like pack of cookies, a candy bar, and a pack of cigarettes. Mm-hmm. Like two things feel very like young little girl ish. Like 14-year-old, like, let's buy some sweets and then like a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah, hopefully they were her parents.
Okay. So 4-year-old Alita also walked up to the register with Debbie with a few pieces of candy in her hand as well. So Debbie handed the person working at the B&B, Evelyn Sumi, enough money to only purchase what she had grabbed. So the cigarettes, the candy bar, and the pack of cookies.
Okay.
So Debbie told Evelyn that Alita had money to pay for her pieces of candy that she grabbed.
Okay.
So Evelyn was like sitting there watching Debbie paid her amount, and she's like, oh, like, this little girl, this 4-year-old girl has her own money. She can buy her own shit.
Sure. Yeah.
Which, I don't know. Seems a little weird, but whatever.
Like, I'm not paying for my little sister's candy. Yeah, I'm like, she has her own.
Fuck this child. There's, like, nine others. Like,
yeah.
Like, pay for your own shit.
Yeah, here's your allowance.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. Allowance from fucking stolen goods that his her father have gotten from livestock and other things.
I'm actually still waiting to find out if she even had money. So
the two girls start to walk out of the store without Alita paying for the candy.
Okay. The daughter is learning how to scheme.
Yes.
Oh no.
Evelyn says something to Debbie, like, hey, like, your little sister or whoever, she didn't pay for those candies. So Debbie takes the candies from Alita and puts them back.
Okay.
Alita goes back and grabs the candies. And Evelyn says something again. She's like, hey, she's took the candies again.
Oh.
Like, this little girl, like, she's stealing.
Okay, now your little sister's stealing.
Oh. Right. Did you ever steal anything when you were little?
I did.
Yeah? What was it?
I stole from Ben Franklin.
Ben Franklin's a craft store in our hometown.
What did you steal?
I blinked at a box.
I definitely, as like, I have a very strong memory. It's like one of my earliest memories. I was like at a dollar store or something with like two of my sisters. I have three older sisters. I was with two of them. And I took a Barney necklace. Barney the dinosaur.
Yes.
I remember it had like some beads on it, and like the little Barney medallion had like bubbles in it. Mm-hmm. Like one of those like stupid liquidy things. I stole it. We got in the car, and I start sobbing.
You felt that?
I'm so upset. I was so upset that I stole it. I was like, I took this. I'm so sorry. I was like a fucking wreck.
What happened?
They took me back and I gave it back.
Did?
Yeah. Because I guess I was like insisting that I needed to go back and return this necklace. Because I was so upset.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Little fucking tiny little Missy.
I remember the first time I saw finding out about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't know. Mm-hmm. A similar situation, I guess. I was like grocery shopping with my mother.
Yeah.
I think it was a coloring book. It was a princess coloring book.
Yeah.
And we get in the car or like at the parking lot when she realizes this to like have it on me.
Mm-hmm.
And then she informed me that I stole. And I don't remember if she took me back. I think she did, but I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know why I remember going back. I definitely remember saying we need to go back and they took me back.
Because you're a good kid.
Maybe. Anyways. So, Lolita was kind of doing the same thing, is what it sounds like. She was like, it feels like a weird, like, pushing the boundaries.
At 4 years old, you don't know.
Like, yeah, like, you're a little kid. Like, you don't know consequences because your parents probably didn't tell you that stuff yet. But, like, yeah, like, I think you're also just, like, as a child, you push boundaries, right? Like, you try to see how far people can go before they, like, say something. So, Lolita tried to take more candy. Debbie takes the candy back because Evelyn says something, the cashier at the store. And this causes Lolita to have a fucking temper tantrum because she doesn't get her candy. Because
mm-hmm.
She's a fucking four-year-old.
Yes.
It's what four-year-olds do. They just like their temper tantrums. Even though,
you know? I'm just astonished why they're still in the store. I'm like, this is a lot of lingering for a four-year-old to be able to grab multiple candies.
Candy twice.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so after the temper tantrum starts, Debbie drags the little girl out of the store. She's like literally kicking and screaming.
Sure, yeah.
So during this time, 50-year-old Lois Bowenkamp, one of the store owners, comes up front. She like asks Evelyn what happened. Evelyn explains the situation, which is when Tammy Sue, the oldest daughter, comes into the store and begins like going off on these two like older women.
Okay.
She's probably a teenager. Saying they accused her little sister of being a thief.
The baby sister?
The 4-year old. The 4-year old Lolita. They're like, you called my sister a thief.
A 4-year old's not a thief.
Yeah, she's not a thief. And like, from what I've read about this situation, Evelyn was never like, she's a thief. She was just like, hey, either pay for that or put it back.
Sure.
Type of situation. She wasn't trying to be like, this baby's a fucking criminal.
Yeah, like a thief is like a pattern of behavior. Yeah. A baby taking candy is just like,
this is like what like a baby does, you know.
Yeah.
Like the baby doesn't know. And like Evelyn was ever like, fuck this baby, like get this baby out of here. She was just like, hey, you gotta pay for that or you gotta put it back.
Yeah.
Which
Madeline cares too much. We know this now about retail workers. They have no fucks to give.
No.
At the time, they probably would have cared. We would have tried to stop.
Okay. Oh, for sure. For sure. So then Evelyn tries to explain to Tammy Sue what actually had happened, but Tammy Sue didn't want to hear it. She like goes off on them, and then she says at the end, like, no one from her family will ever shop at the store again.
Okay.
Which is a classic Karen. Fucking Karen bullshit.
Absolutely.
We were like, please never come back.
No, around to your toxic ass out the door.
Yeah. And get the fuck out of my life.
Never come back.
Yeah. Please. Please never come back.
I wish you would never come back.
There is like, I don't think maybe just like Karen's, both of us have worked in restaurants for a long time. I don't know if Karen's get it when they say shit like that. Where you're like, do you
understand what's going on here, because I would love for you to never fucking come back. Like, you have, not to be a bitch, but you have no power here. Like, when you get to the point where we're like, no, leave, and you're just like, I'm never coming back, you're like, fucking thank God. Am I wrong in that sense?
No, I've never had someone say that to me, and I was sad about it. No, never.
I've had a couple of times. Like, I think because I was like bartending specifically, I like would cut people off sometimes.
Oh, sure. Oh, people have said it to me. I've just never been like, oh no.
Oh yeah. Sorry.
As a bartender, that cutting people off—that's a whole.
Yeah.
That's a tricky situation.
It is tricky. Like, usually it's just like, hey, you know, like this is like. Generally, what I used to do is when I felt like people were like kind of on the teetering on the edge of being cut off, and they ordered one more drink,
I
would hand them their drink, be like, "Hey, this is your last one."
Yes,
it was like it would soften the blow in that sense.
Yes,
but there would be some times where people were like, "Really?" I'm like, "Really?" Like, I give zero fucks about you. Like, just don't.
But what they don't understand, like a drunkard does not, because. It's only people who have been on the other side of that bar are people who serve mm-hmm. that have taken the test that you have to take to be able to do that. And
you can lose your job.
I'm the only one of the two of us that knows what I say goes.
Yeah.
And you think you have anything to do with it.
Also, you understand the repercussions if you don't, like, enforce this rule.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. The guy on the other side of the bar who's like the drunkard does like, not understand. He thinks he's got like some say in the matter.
Right. He's like, oh, customer's always right. I'm like, yeah, I don't fucking care.
No, literally, it's not about that. This is a law. This is legal.
It's like, it's the saying instead of customer's always right. It's like, you're a guest in my house.
Yeah.
And this is my house, my rules.
Definitely when you are serving people alcohol.
Yeah. You're like, fucking try me, bitch.
Yeah.
Honestly, he's a live for cutting people off. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, no.
Because I just love the antagonistic. You're like, you want to fucking try this? You want to fucking try this? Bring it.
Wow. You know, I hate that having to do that. But it hasn't happened that often. But I'm also not a bartender. Never been a bartender.
Yeah.
It's different.
I really liked being a bartender over anything else in restaurants. I think I liked the amount of sarcasm I could dish out.
Yeah.
Because that's like 85% of my personality.
It's a different crowd that will say.
And like, I like being able to like be like witty and like just say like snarky little things to people and they would think it's funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the shit you get away with being a bartender is like doesn't fly with being a server.
Oh, for sure not. Or any other.
Yeah, and maybe I just like being a little bit position of power, which maybe I should talk about therapy, but whatever, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
We might say. Living for cutting people off is matching.
Okay, maybe living for cutting people off.
Matching energies.
Yeah.
Karen for caring.
I think I just like being able to be like, toe up, be like, you want to fucking try me? Like, please do.
Well, it's after so many years of the restaurant industry.
Yeah, maybe.
You're just like.
Just a big ass chip on my shoulder.
Here I am. I'm in position. I will fuck your evening up. And then you just have to go somewhere else to drink.
Right? Or you get cut off there too.
What do you mean?
I don't know. Like,
oh, eventually.
Yeah. If there's
like,
also
you're not
like
calling the next restaurant to be like.
Sometimes.
I'm uncovering.
It's called being petty. But no, there were like legitimately sometimes people would like come in.
I'm picking up an era of petty.
It is an era of petty. But like people would come in and be like just fucking schnockered. And yeah. Like a drink, true. And they'd be like, "Whoa!" Like I'm just, like you could hear them, you know, because bartenders can hear anything you say. It's saying at a bar top, most bartenders can hear. I will say that right now. So don't fucking divulge your secrets at a bar.
Sure.
But like they would talk about like going to like the next bar over.
Yeah.
And then like they would like order a drink for me, and you could like just you could just fucking tell they're drunk, and you're like, "Hey, dude, like I can't do that."
Oh, like you're not even like you're already wasted.
Right. You're like, do you want some food? Do you want some water? You know, we can help you out in that sense, but like I'm not getting another alcoholic beverage.
You've had enough.
I'm like, you never even said you had enough because like that's antagonistic.
Oh no.
But then you knew because of their previous conversations, they were going to the dive bar across the street. Mm-hmm. Specifically for me. And I'd be like, we gotta tell the dive bar across the street that like we cut these people off.
Because they could also get in trouble and like get like a fine or jail time or whatever.
Yes, but it's serious
fucking business. It is their responsibility, but it's also it's serious fucking business.
I will say that, also having worked in the industry for many years, if the bar across the street, the restaurant next door, anybody called me, this happened, of course, and says, "Hey, be on the lookout for these folks," you are always on the lookout, and you appreciate the heads up because it is easier and better. Like it doesn't. It's not like we go around ratting people out.
No.
It's very rare.
That was a rare occurrence. It's only like a handful of times that ever happened to me. But like, that was like an extreme version of that. Where you're like, you just, like, these people just need to go fucking home.
Yeah.
You know? Or like, yeah.
I know. Sometimes you care about people more than they care about themselves.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's the lesson.
That's the lesson, kids. Okay. So back to our story. That was a really big sidebar.
Enormous.
So, after Tammy Sue comes in, yells at Lois and Evelyn, later that day, Ken shows up.
All right.
To the B&B supermarket.
He got a word about it.
And starts threatening Lois with a knife in his hand. And that's when Lois's husband, the other owner of the B&B, his name's Ernest, but everyone called him Bo. So Bo and Camp. Comes from the back and, like, hears this altercation and, like, comes and tries to, like, smooth things over. Trina, Ken's, quote-unquote...
I wanted to call him Kevin.
Too. I don't know why I wanted to call him Kevin. Ken's, quote-unquote, wife. Trina, the, like, fucking teenager.
What's her name? It's not Trina.
It's Trina. There's Tammy Sue, that's the older one, the daughter. Trina's his wife.
Her name was Trina the whole time?
Trina. What did you think I was fucking saying?
I don't remember now.
What the hell? I'm worried they'll say the wrong name. Her name's fucking Trina.
I thought it was Trixie or something. I don't know. In my mind.
Trixie Mattel?
In my mind, she was made more sad.
Oh, her name.
Last time we spoke about
her name is Trina. So Trina also comes in with Ken and starts yelling at Lois. And wants to know who accused her, quote-unquote, baby girl of stealing.
Dude, she's all the way in there.
She is all the way in. It's like...
But she was a child. Like,
yeah.
Groomed and raised by this
pedo. Like, 12 years old is when they started grooming her. So it's like, it's hard to be mad at her.
Yes.
Like, it sucks.
It's sad.
It's sad. So it's sad. Very sad.
Okay.
So while Trina starts yelling... Ken basically tells Trina to shut up. He's like, shut up. And then he, like, asks Lois to explain what happens.
Okay.
Lois does. Ken, after that, demands a pack of cigarettes from Lois. Lois, who is a very stubborn, stoic woman, tells him, Ken, that it was declared earlier that their family was no longer wanting to shop at this grocery store anymore.
You rat bitch.
The level of petty in that moment. Oh my God. It's so fucking, I love it.
She hates them.
She fucking hates
them. This family is trash.
They are trash. So it will be, so I will say this is not in the notes, but like Lois and Bo, they were living in Nebraska for a long time. So they were kind of not around for the whole Ken ordeal.
They don't know who they're dealing with?
I think they know who he is and, like, they know, like, kind of, like, his reputation. But, like, they weren't, like, around to, like, witness all the bullshit he had done.
Okay.
So maybe they, like, weren't just quite as scared of him as everyone else.
Is this couple going to be the couple that instigates the justice?
It's a bit of an end game here. Okay. This is what we're getting into.
So for it. Okay.
So... When Ken hears this, he kind of, like, smirks, walks out with Trina.
He leaves,
but this is when the bullshit starts for Bo and Lois.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he's not going to walk away
entirely,
but I'm surprised he left. Okay.
Yeah, so this next label of bullets, I called The Shitstorm Continues.
All right.
So, after this incident, that is when McElroy begins harassing the Bowen camps, which is Lois and Bo.
Okay.
So he begins following them home in various cars that he owns. probably because he's getting a shit ton of money from stealing. And he continually starts, like, saying harassing and threatening things to them.
Sure. More of the same.
Yes.
He's intimidating. He's harassing. He's calling. He's
doing all the things.
All the same things that he's done.
Yeah. So the Bowen camps call Russ, the local sheriff's deputy, who was also Trina's cousin and that cousin uncle.
Uncle, right.
We talked about this in the beginning, in the first episode, which is so fucked.
I know. What the hell is Russ doing?
He, like, there's no charges filed against him for Trina, so he can't do anything. Yeah, remember that. No witnesses, no charges, no fucking case. Remember that. That's gonna come full circle.
Why does police corruption only work?
I don't know if I call that corruption.
No, he's not.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh.
Why does it only work in the way that it shouldn't?
You're right.
Superman type of police.
Can you just, like, corruptly fucking shoot him?
God. No. Because I'm really digging such a criminally sounding hole in this
episode. You really are. So, when Russ talks to the Bowen camps about the harassment, he tells them, and I quote, "Just ignore him. He's not going to do anything." Which is a fucking lie. He's done plenty to this town and to other people.
He's shot a man.
He's shot a man. He's
and fucking, a woman in the face.
He's burned a house down. Like, he's not going to, like, not do anything.
These are some tough Missouri folks.
Seriously.
You're like, there ain't nothing.
So, after this, Ken would sit outside the B&B market during the day and just, like, just sit there and, like, watch the B&B market. And then would follow Lois and Bo home.
Because he's got no job.
Because he's got no fucking job. He would also sit outside their home at night, too. He would just constantly just sit outside of their whatever.
You're treat me that way for so long.
Right? So, one night, when Ken saw that Lois and Bo were aware that he was, like, just sitting there staring at them, he gets out of his car, took his rifle, and shot a few rounds in the air. Like, looking at them through the window, shooting rounds into the air. Which, it feels very, like, small dick energy.
It's starting to get a little cringy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like if it was available at the time, he wouldn't have had, like, a lifted truck.
Oh, sure.
You know? Mm-hmm. Not to go after the lifted truck girlies of the world, but, like, I mean.
If you're a girly that drives a lifted truck, I have no notes for you.
I don't know. I feel about that either. But you know what I mean.
But I have no notes for her. She's just doing her thing.
I mean, I say girly.
I would wonder if it's her husband's job.
I just say girly as a more of a term of, like, I'm including everyone in that statement, including males. So
straight ones that drive lifted.
Yeah. Trucks. Yeah. I feel like girly kind of pisses them off. So maybe that's why I'm doing it. Yeah. We are inclusive. I will say that. The gals, gays, and theys are welcome. Honestly. I'd rather have them.
The gals.
Gays and theys.
That's not inclusive of the
white man?
Street white man that's driving the trucks.
I know. That's the point.
And you're
yeah, you're if you're a green flag.
Get the fuck
come
out
on
of
in.
Here.
I'm sorry. Okay, you're right. Okay. So after he shot a few rounds in the air while the couple was, like, staring at him through the window, Lois went to the nearby town of Maryville, we have a Maryville up here, mm-hmm. and tried to report the harassment to the local sheriff. Again, nothing was done to help these fucking poor elderly people with fucking Ken. They're basically, like, kind of shrugged their shoulders, like, there's not a whole lot we can do.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. I mean, it's like, you hear about, like, stalkers. Who are, like, stalking people, like, actively. And there's just, like, this shrug of, like, well, they're, like, unless they do something illegal, there's nothing we can do.
I heard a statistic this week on another podcast that 0.1% of stalkers are ever convicted and do any time.
That's gross.
Yeah.
That's really gross.
But it's, like, barely a crime here.
In the States.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense, unfortunately.
But, like, have you seen Baby Reindeer?
I have not watched it yet.
We didn't talk about it?
You told me about it. Oh, I still haven't watched it.
Did we talk about it on the podcast at all?
I don't think so.
Okay, so It's an enormous Netflix show now. If you watch it, you'll see that this guy's entire life was ruined. This happens to many thousands of women over daily.
Mm-hmm.
However, this is like a good example of like, it just happens to a guy.
They can go both ways, yeah.
And people are fucking absolutely insane. And she's literally out there right now on Piers Morgan.
Wait, like, it's based on a true story?
Oh, it's an absolutely true story.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The guy who acts in it wrote it about his own experience. It turned it into a like a piece of art form, like a play. Uh-huh. And then Netflix, it was like a one-man show. And then Netflix was like, let's make a show. And he acted in it. It's
his story.
I didn't
know that. Mm-hmm. I thought it was like a scripted fictional thing.
No, it's his story.
Oh, that's so sad.
Ugh, gross. And she's just out there.
Yeah, just... No, she's getting, like, press.
Yes.
Oh, God. So, she's still stalking him?
I hope it's not triggering the stalking.
I hope it's not either.
But, like, she's talking about him socially, publicly.
Ugh. Poor man.
But anyway, it's serious.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's serious.
It's nonsense that this, you know, department wouldn't do anything.
Yeah. To someone who's, like... had fucking like 20 felonies against him.
But we are still working on Stockman being taken seriously.
Yes, right now, for sure. So. Sure. Yeah. So after Lois goes to try to report him, the harassment continues. So Ken is driving past the couple's home multiple times a day and night, firing shots in the air. Mm-hmm. And this is when Lois decides that the police were not going to fucking help her. She bought herself a 20-gauge shotgun and left it next to her bed.
Oh, so she didn't have a gun before.
No. No. She's like, I'm buying a shotgun. Come for me, motherfucker.
But she waited.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
So, after this, Ken would sit at local bars in the area and basically brag about his harassment of the couple. Like, he just, like, openly boasting about this.
Disgusting.
It's fucking disgusting. And he would really lean into the fact that he thought Bo was a weak old man because Lois was the one that stood out to him.
Thank God for Lois, but that's
it's enough. Just it's it like really proves that like his whole view on women in general, like he just thinks of them as like fucking objects. It's clearly with like the way he's groomed and tossed aside other like young girls, right? And I'm sure like the fact that like an elderly woman stood up to him was like, go fuck yourself, probably really pissed him off.
Really suspicious that there was a lot more abuse in his family of 16 children.
I mean, from what it sounds like, all of his siblings were, like, fine.
I don't know.
They were just, like, normal, actually, just normal fucking people.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like, I didn't really talk about it in, like, our last episode, but, like, there was moments where his mother was, like, trying to, like, talk him, like, down, essentially, being like, what are you doing?
During all this?
Yeah, during all this.
Oh, okay.
And, like, he just, like, wouldn't fucking listen to her.
I don't know, maybe something happened to him.
Maybe.
It doesn't make it okay, but like,
yeah.
I don't know, it's absolutely insane, this behavior. It's like somebody who's like, craves dominating. It's all about domination and like power over
right.
other people.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a person that feels weak,
weak.
And insecure and
yeah.
hurt.
I mean, it there was like some reports of him like being bullied in elementary school about like being illiterate, but that doesn't, like, equate to this.
I don't know.
I was bullied in elementary school. I was bullied in middle school. I'm not a fucking monster. I just play one on TV.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm just saying, like, it just... There are plenty of people who've had, like, far worse situations happen in them in life.
Yeah.
And they come out completely unscathed. Not unscathed completely.
It doesn't matter
but
what
just,
you
like,
go through.
They come out being, like, somewhat normal people.
No, I'm just saying maybe there's something we haven't heard about.
Yeah, I mean, there's also, like, the whole head trauma thing.
Yeah.
Maybe that was a factor with this guy.
He's a problem, though.
Yeah, he's a fucking problem. Yeah. He's definitely the problem. Okay. So, next date we're getting to is July 8th, 1980.
All right.
Bo Bowenkamp. It's his birthday. It's his 70th birthday.
I really think I like Bo. The name. So cute.
Yeah. It's a cute name. Yeah.
I like it. I didn't know Bo was short for Ernest. I'm not
sure. I don't know if that was the...
I thought you said his name was
Ernest. His name is Ernest, but I don't know if Bo was short for Ernest. I think Bo was just a nickname.
Literally, sometimes nicknames make no sense. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm going to look that up later.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, sorry. Oh my god.
Like, nicknames are like an abbreviation of something.
So, not always, though. I can't think of an example right now, but sometimes they are like, how did you get that from that?
I mean, like, Richard's Dick.
Good example. Which, yes.
I mean, I go by Missy on this podcast, but my name is Melissa. I don't know if that's another example.
I guess it could be.
I go by Missy on this podcast because you call me Missy because I grew up being called Missy. Sorry, just to clarify to people because I probably just really, I don't know. Actually, whatever. But that's why.
Same.
Yeah. Like, it's so, I mean, like, there's just, I don't know. Nicknames are nicknames. Who the fuck knows? I was okay. Also, so, in middle school. Sorry. There was, it sounds really problematic now, but it wasn't at the time. I had a PE teacher who called me Sissy Missy. And she called me Sissy for short.
Oh, just like sweet? But you don't think she called you Sissy because you were a wuss?
No, she called me Sissy because I was the opposite of the wuss. She didn't tell me that. She's like, I don't want you to think you're a sissy. I think you're tough, but like Sissy Missy, just make it's like funny because you're not a sissy.
Okay.
So, like, I mean, nicknames come from weird fucking places.
But did
places.
Everyone else call you Sissy?
No, but I did have a sweatshirt.
I've never heard anyone refer to you as Sissy.
No, yeah. But I did have a sweatshirt from, like, middle school, like, I think, like, volleyball, that, like, it said Sissy on the back.
That's cute.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah.
I like that.
Okay. Anyways, I'm just saying, fucking nicknames come from weird places.
All right, so it's some June or July 1980. And
July 8th, 1980. It's Beau's birthday. He's waiting out back at the B&B around 7:30 p.m. at the loading bay. He's waiting for this, like, an electrician to come and look at the air conditioning for the store.
Bummer of a birthday.
Yeah. Well, so your 70th birthday?
Hopefully it's early in the day.
7:30 p.m. I literally just said that.
7:30 p.m.?
Uh-huh.
Damn, I missed that entirely. All right. Yeah, bummer of a birthday.
It's a bummer of a birthday, but like these are like fucking hardworking.
He's also spent 69 salt of the earth
people. Yeah, I mean, who knows? So Beau was in the back cutting cardboard boxes when Ken pulled up in his green Dodge pickup truck.
Okay.
Ken sat there for an hour just watching Beau, just sitting there being a fucking menace.
Man, doing my
business. Right, my own goddamn business, cutting boxes.
I'm a loser.
So, Ken circles around the block, comes back around to the loading bay. He gets out of the truck and asks Beau if he called the police. And Beau says no. Ken then asks Beau if he was mad at him. Beau says no. I just don't think he was like, I don't fucking care about you. Which I feel like is like the best way to deal with someone like this.
It seems like it might have triggered him.
It feels very triggering, unfortunately. So
I'm scared for Beau.
Both then said to Ken that he was on private property and he wanted him to leave.
Yeah.
So there were some teenage boys kind of like watching this whole altercation happening, like four teenage boys. Ken walks over to them and he handed them some money and told them, like, go get something cold to drink. And then they left. So, while Ken was doing this, Beau then went back to, like, cutting boxes and just kind of mind his own fucking business. And he kind of, like, heard behind him Ken rooting around in his truck. Beau turns around, sees Ken holding a shotgun. Beau ducks from the fire of the shot.
Oh.
But the shot hits him in the neck.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So people in the tavern next door hear a shot go off and look out back to the B&B and see that Beau has been shot, but thankfully he's still alive.
Yeah, thankfully, because you're telling it from Beau's perspective.
Yeah, yeah. So
horrific.
Greg Clement, the tavern owner, he calls an ambulance, and he told the teenage boys that had been hanging out around the area to go find the local marshal, who was named David Dunn, and tell him what happened. So,
broad daylight. He's just like
7:30 p.m. during the summertime. Yeah, it's still daylight. Yeah. Yeah. So, Beau was sent to the hospital and survived his wounds. And at the same time, a manhunt by local sheriffs and marshals were like out to find Ken. So, however, Ken had a police scanner in all of his trucks, in his cars.
Sure.
And so he knows what roads to avoid and invade in order to, like, not be arrested, okay. Right? However, Cam went back to the farm to grab Trina.
I'm sorry. I'm just, like, I work in tech. I'm like, are we still using radios?
Yeah.
For police tech? Uh-huh. They have to be doing something different by now.
There's a police scanner app.
You
You could go on, like, right and now, download the app, it. And, like, see how the shit going on.
To invest something.
There needs to be some encryption there, for sure.
They need to do something.
It's so easy to just hear the shit that's going on. You're right. I agree. So, Ken goes back to the farm, grabs Trina, and they're going to try to, like, make a run for Kansas. And, like, I guess hide out until things die down. However, a man by the name Dean Stratton, who was a corporal in the area, was able to track down and arrest McElroy. And Dean had, like, also had, like, a few interactions with Ken throughout his, like, fucking lifetime of crime, which included a moment where he confronted Ken while he was actively stealing pigs.
Okay. He goes way back.
Yeah, he goes way back. He's like, hey, what are you doing? Ken fucking pulls a shotgun on him.
Oh.
He pulls a shotgun on a cop.
Yeah.
He's like, get the fuck out of here. And Dean's like, I guess. He's like, I don't know what to do.
Why is everybody here a fucking pussy? I cannot deal.
I mean, but, like, if you have no proof, but, yeah, he could have just arrested him right there. You're right. I don't know. That's just, like,
these all seem like the sweetest people.
Yeah.
And then just this villain. Everybody else there is nice.
Yeah.
And meek.
Just, like, normal fucking farm town people. So, knowing how dangerous Ken was from this interaction, Dean was chasing Ken in, like, another town, or, like, the next town over, and was alerting other officers, knowing that Ken was, like, listening in, and basically was telling other officers, this man is armed and dangerous, they'll be afraid to shoot him.
Okay.
So Ken, listening to this, is kind of seeing the writing on the wall and, like, knowing how this is going to end. So he decided to pull over and let Dean approach his car.
Okay.
So Dean informed Ken that he was being arrested for the shooting in Skidmore.
He's going to surrender?
He's surrendering in this moment.
Okay.
So he's letting Ken know that Dean lets Ken know that he's, like, arresting him for the shooting in Skidmore. Ken plays stupid. Acts like he's like, what's shooting in Skidmore? I don't know what you're talking about. And Trina, in the car as well, is like, oh, he's been with me the whole day. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Which is very sad. So, Ken, while interrogation, denies everything, asks for a lawyer, because that's how it fucking goes with this guy.
He's like, oh my god, it's got me, it's fine.
He's like, let me call my lawyer. Fucking Richard.
Swing and dig.
We'll McFadden bullshit. So, while he's waiting for his lawyer, he was charged with a Class A felony of assault in the first degree.
Okay.
Which should just be fucking attempted murder. Should it be assault?
I don't know. What the difference? Maybe they didn't have it.
I don't know.
In the 80s.
He was also released on $3,000 bail bond.
30?
30.
Okay.
30K.
That's a lot.
For a bail bond, I think you only have to pay
You only have to pay 10%?
You only have to pay 10%, right?
Oh, I don't know.
On a bail bond, I think. I'm making that up. I don't know. So, a month later, so he's released on bail. He's just fucking hanging out waiting for trial for this felony assault. So a month later, Ken was back in the bar next to the B&B where this all went down. And was jokingly asking about, well, the commotion was at the grocery store about a month ago. He was like, oh, what happened? He was like, was the grocery store robbed? But, like, what happened to, like, why'd he get shot? Like, and, like, it was a fucking, like, sarcastic joke.
Gross.
Yeah. Just.
He seems like a total blowhard. Just like, what are you talking about, dude?
Like, we all know what you did, and, like,
yeah,
you're just,
like, that kind of loudmouth, like,
yeah.
Ew.
Yeah, it's just Fuck, he just fucking sucks.
I'm cringing so hard. I wish I was a snail. I could just like
go back into your little shell.
Yes. Like it's making me so physically uncomfortable to imagine what it would have been like to have been around this man.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's really building up to something, right?
Yeah, I want to beat the fuck out of him.
Yeah. So for the next year, the Bowen camps were continually harassed by Ken. Because once again, his lawyer made sure he was out of jail, and he kept pushing back his court date for this fucking crime he committed for trying to murder a man. So he was continually harassing the Bowen camps and just people at Skidmore in general, because there were so many witnesses to this crime, like the families of the four boys, the bartender. Like, he was like harassing all these people. And basically trying to tell anyone who, like, was going to talk at this trial that, like, he would, like, fucking come for them. Mm-hmm. Or come for their families. The same bullshit he kept doing. Once again, no fucking witness, no crime.
Yeah.
That was his whole thing. He would also start making, like, various calls to the families and make gruesome and, like, really vile threats of mutilation and murder.
Oh, wow.
To these families. He's, like, escalating.
Yeah.
Like, he's getting, like, more and more just, like,
well, like,
fucking vile.
You've said all the nastiest shit you could say to people.
Yeah.
For, like, the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Like, even you are, like,
desensitized. I mean, I guess you gotta, like, up the ante.
Oh, yeah.
So this is when the people of Skidmore started to arm themselves more than they already had been armed. Because they're, like, just, like, this guy still isn't in fucking jail. And that was threatening, like, everybody here. And so, like, they just, like, started to arm themselves with rifles. Different various types of shotguns, you know, just trying to, like, basically kind of just, like, get themselves an arsenal against this fucking man.
Wow.
Who's just, like, this fucking monstrous entity in this, like, tiny little town. So, in September of 1980, the preliminary hearing started for the attempted murder of Beau. Where Beau had to testify about what happened to him. But even though Beau was like, this kind of told the story, this what I just told you, Ken was still allowed to go free after this. And his scumbag lawyer, Robert McFadden, was trying to push the trial back in the hopes that Beau would eventually die from the wounds of the attack from Ken. He's like, let's just keep pushing this back. Hopefully Beau will die off. Because
and then isn't it murder?
If there's no witness, there's no crime.
Yeah, but then it's no longer.
I know. I'm assault. Not saying
you murdered the man.
Then you is it murder if he dies like a year later from the wounds?
I don't know.
It's like a weird philosophical thing.
Like, right? I guess it. Well, not if it's like an open wound, but you mean like as a complication?
As a complication. I mean, like, I'm sure there's like a trial. Like, that could be.
See, this is why those poor girls who did not take the stand.
Yeah.
Did not
take the stand.
Yeah.
I agree.
Self-preservation, that's all.
So, McFadden was successful in pushing the trial back to June 1981, which was a year later.
Yeah.
And was also able to get the trial to be held in a nearby county. Okay. Due to jury prejudice that he thought was going to happen within Bidet County.
You think?
Which, I mean, it's probably accurate. And cannot be able to have, like, a fair trial. Okay. Like, poor baby.
But those is rules is rules.
Rules is rules. So, during this trial for the attempted murder of Beau, McFadden claimed that Ken acted in self-defense.
Against
Beau.
Who was cutting boxes.
Stating that Beau had threatened Ken with a knife because he was using a knife to cut the boxes.
The box cutter.
And told him, they said that like Beau was like holding a knife, told Ken to get off his property.
That's again, not a threat. That's a man warning you to leave.
That's him warning you to leave.
Be
there. Yeah. Ken then stated that he fired a warning shot towards Beau after this altercation.
None of this makes sense.
He didn't realize that he had hit the old man. Because, say, he fired a shot and drove off.
But you're on his property. And
you're on his fucking property.
None of this makes sense. Where does this go? Tell me nowhere.
Kim was sentenced to second-degree assault and 2 years in prison.
Okay.
The jury essentially believed the defense's story that this was some sort of dispute that had gone too far. Because I remember they're like removed from all this fucking drama that had been happening because they're in a different county. Mm-hmm. Right? This is where it gets bad. Okay, so however.
Okay.
Like I said, however is not like a big word in this thing. However, the court also granted 25 days for McElroy and his fucking lawyer to submit an appeal, which means that Ken was able to go free during this time.
Okay.
So, you have 25 days, you have a month to submit an appeal. You're welcome to go home during this. Why? I don't fucking know. So, during the 25 days, Ken pointed a gun at a couple for almost hitting his car with theirs. Like, they almost, like, backed into his car. Just some random couple. Which meant that there was an additional $10,000 added to his bail bond. And additionally, he wasn't allowed to carry any guns on himself or in any vehicles.
It took this long?
It took this fucking long.
Jesus.
It took him threatening another random couple.
God.
Just mind their own business with a fucking gun.
I'm starting to think that there was... Maybe they had trauma. Is he on drugs? Like, you're not talking... Is he on drugs? He must also be on drugs, right? This is the 80s.
He sounds like he just drinks a lot.
He's an unscrupulous character. Like, I just don't understand.
I think he's just a fucking so monster.
Unhinged.
It's unhinged. But, like...
It's non-stop chaos.
He's also, you gotta think about it, he's been getting away with this for so fucking long, he probably thinks he's invincible.
But he has no chill? Is he never...
He has no fucking chill.
This is the worst.
Because he just continually gets away with being the fucking monster.
I don't like him at all.
Well, yeah, no shit.
I hate him.
So, at this point, everyone in the town is getting more uncomfortable, scared. And anytime that Ken drove into town, people would just, like, fucking go into their houses, go into their businesses, and, like, just fucking hide from this man.
Oh, my God. He's like a black cloud.
Yeah. Just, like, this fucking, like, just cancer that goes through this town. So, during this time, also, Ken would continue to harass various people in town. Anyone who's gonna, like, kind of fucking testify against this man.
Getting out of this, dude.
He's getting freedom. He's continually getting able to go free.
No friends. No family. Just
nothing.
Lonely.
Just he still has Trina. She's still around.
She doesn't love him.
No, I mean she's a fucking prisoner at this point, I would say. Okay, so while this is all happening, we're going to July 10th, 1981.
Okay.
So about almost a year exactly to when he tried to kill Bo. So Ken was set to be in court that day, and a Skidmore resident by the name of Pete Ward got some of the townspeople together in a caravan that would go down to the courthouse and kind of like basically show their support for anyone who's going to testify against him. Mm. It's kind of like, have you ever seen those like stories about like bikers like kind of accompanying like small children who like have to testify against their like accusers or like their abusers?
No, but that is really nice.
Yeah, there's like this whole movement of bikers like accompanying like small children who have to like go to court. It's very sweet. It's very similar to this.
Okay.
So, however,
okay.
Once again,
so,
the fucking lawyer strikes again.
Okay.
And was able to push the court date back another month. It's already been a year. He's pushing it back again.
Yeah, he knows how to do this.
So, once word that the court date had been postponed, the caravan that had planned to go down to protect witnesses, like down to the other county courthouse, decided to hold a town meeting about like what they were going to do about Ken. They're like, we're so fucking sick of this man. We have to figure something out.
Okay, good.
Like, they're like, what are we going to do? In this meeting, it included the town mayor. Literally, he was like, I guess I had to show up to this. What else am I going to fucking do? It also included Dave Dunbar, who was a retired sheriff who had dealt with Ken in the past.
Okay.
And it also had the current sheriff, Sheriff Estes, who was also kind of there to like kind of like talk to the masses, essentially, of this group. So someone during this meeting suggested that they just shoot Ken so everyone could go on with their lives and move on, essentially. And Pete Ward, the guy who had like initially kind of like rallied the caravan together, said that like they should probably just try to handle this legally and go through the justice system. And this is when they kind of asked the sheriff, Sheriff Estes, what they can do. And he suggested just setting up a neighborhood watch. Which,
wow.
Like, a neighborhood watch, unless you're like heavily fucking armed with like, I don't know, a grenade. Just like get this man.
Yeah, eventually someone's gonna have to get their hands dirty with
this guy. Yeah, absolutely. So during the time that this meeting was going on in like, it's called the Legion Hall, which is I think like a kind of across the street from this bar. At the same time, Ken and his quote unquote wife, I call her wife because I think of her as a victim, were sitting at the D&G bar, which is a local dive bar in town, which is kind of like kind of kitty corner across the street from where the town meeting was happening. And this was around 10 a.m., which, you know, bar at 10 a.m., it's fucking just, I don't know.
Yeah.
So news that Ken was back in town had reached the town meeting. So they're like across the street. They're like, he's back in town. He's at the bar across the street. And so witnesses in the bar at that time said that Ken was there with a rifle that had a bayonet attached to it.
Okay.
Just like fucking ready.
He's trying to like find another creative way.
Yeah, I mean, he technically isn't supposed to have any sort of guns on them, but he has his bayonet rifle just ready to go.
Flamboyant. It's just like a little bit dramatic.
It's very dramatic. And he was kind of just making like thinly veiled threats to anyone who would listen. Just like, you know, like I think at this point he was also getting a little bit just like paranoid about the town and like kind of like knew that like everyone was like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy, like we have to do something. So that's why he kind of, it sounds like also why he had the bayonet with the rifle. So he was also like kind of making like threats about anyone who's going to testify him against this upcoming trial, just saying like, I will take out anybody who like comes against me. Well, Ken and Trina were in the bar. It was mostly empty, but slowly more and more people started walking in and grabbing a beer. It's like all these men. And so all these men had a beer. None of them were being charged for the beer. And they were all just like fucking standing there with a beer in their hand, staring at Ken. They're like, we see you, motherfucker. We're done with you. Super uncomfortable.
Yes. And I'm like, how did they come to this conclusion? How do you rally a group of people this way?
I mean, you push them far enough.
I want to know who was the Katniss Everdeen. Who was like...
The Mockingjay?
Yes.
That's a great question.
Who was the one?
It was like, you know what? We're doing this today.
They inspired.
Yeah. Inspired is a good word. So everyone was sitting there staring at Ken, trying to give him the vibe that like, you're not fucking welcome here. Get the hell out of our town. Like, you need to fucking leave right now. Trina picks up on the vibe. And she was like very anxious and uncomfortable. But Ken just kind of sits there.
He's an idiot.
Yeah, he just sits there, smokes a cigarette, drinks his beer, like acts like nothing's happening. So then Ken finishes his beer, buys a 6-pack. Granted, it reminder that it's also 10 a.m.
He also, because he wanted to keep drinking all day, but he probably was like, I'm totally not scared, but I'll take a 6-pack to go. They're like, you know, if you leave,
normally,
usually you close the bar down.
So he buys a 6-pack. Pack of cigarettes and leaves the bar with Trina.
Yeah, he's scared.
Yeah, and he gets his pickup truck kind of parked out front of the bar. Then this is when citizens of Skidmore come out of the bar and follow the couple outside. It is then that the truck is surrounded by 30 to 60 residents of the town.
Are they men and women?
Yes.
Yes.
So a lot of them were carrying rifles.
Yeah.
A lot of them were carrying shotguns. And a lot of them were from the town meeting that was across the street.
I have never heard this story.
Really?
Never.
Oh, shit. Okay. So, after the truck was surrounded by people, Ken's just kind of sitting there smoking a cigarette. Multiple people open fire on the truck.
They just to aim and take fire.
Uh-huh. So Kenneth struck the bullets multiple times.
Where's Trina?
Trina is not shot, and at some point is dragged out of the truck and taken to a nearby bank.
Oh, so they were aiming at
They him. Were aiming at him.
Wow.
Yeah. It's also said in like a couple sources that someone told Trina in the bank, "You left us no choice."
Yeah.
Which kind of...
She didn't, by the way, but sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, it could also just be interpreted as we were left with no choice.
Yes. Right? I would say they were left with no choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something went down in that meeting that everybody's agreed that no one talks about. That's why we'll never know who was the Mockingjay.
Yes. So, after Ken was shot, everyone leaves the scene and just went to their homes and businesses like it was just another day.
Yeah, and hopefully they slept well.
So multiple witnesses from the B&B market, the D&G tavern, and the bank all saw the incident happen, but no one called the police.
Well, good. They stayed consistent.
So,
a town of quiet people.
Right? 30 minutes after the shooting, one of Ken's brothers called the fucking scumbag lawyer, Robert McFadden, to let him know that Ken had been shot. And that is when Robert calls the local police and lets them know there had been a shooting.
Okay.
So the sheriff and the ambulance show up an hour after Ken had been shot.
They're like, oh no, I'm devastated.
And find him very obviously deceased.
Oops.
Bye. So ballistics report determined that Ken was shot with different multiple guns with different calibers, including a .30-30 and a .20-caliber rifle, and also a shotgun, which seems very poetic because that's what, like, the gun that he used to torture people a lot of the times. Mm-hmm. It was also determined that he was killed instantly with a headshot in the back of the head.
Damn.
Because this truck was fucking surrounded. Like, back of the truck, front of the truck, side of the truck. Everyone's like, no, you're not leaving in this moment. So, it's also reported that the residents of the town picked up every single shell at the scene.
Except the ones that were in his body?
Oh, you mean the bullets? Shells are like the expelled part of the gun. A bullet.
Do they need that to...
Yes, they need that to figure out what the caliber of the rifle, or like, what the gun. They need that to match the gun.
I don't know that much about it.
It's a they need the shell to match the gun to the crime.
Oh.
The bullet doesn't really do anything because the bullet like expands usually and like spreads out when
really?
It's shot. Yeah, yeah,
huh.
Yeah. So okay, they made sure to take every fucking shell
because it separates.
It separates. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So after this, no one came forward to give any sort of witness statement except for Trina. No one talked. It took a rule out of Ken's own book, no witness, no case.
What did Trina say?
Trina was just like kind of told her story of like what happened and how she was like pulled from the car and like someone said that like we left us no choice. Like, and she kind of like claimed a couple, she saw a couple of people like pull the trigger, but it was never really like followed up on. They have the evidence no matter
Damn,
what.
I feel sad.
I do feel sad for her too. So, the sheriff's department to this day cannot find any of the rifles that were used.
No.
There are multiple rumors that
that's
the rifles.
A lie, right?
No, that's not a lie. They can't find them.
Did they look for them?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. But, like, they definitely don't know where they are.
Yeah.
So, there are multiple rumors that the rifles are in nearby rivers. They were dismantled or were taken to different states.
Yeah.
Just, they're fucking gone to
maybe
the wind.
Someone told them exactly how to hide the
evidence. Right? That'd be ideal. Yeah. So, and this is an understatement, the sheriff's department did the bare minimum to try to find out who killed Ken. The only people who really pushed that, like, this needs to, like, be solved was Trina and Robert, his lawyer.
Why does Robert not fuck off at this point?
I'll tell you right in a second. So, Robert continued trying to find some justice for Ken and said that most of the stories about Ken were made up or elaborated on.
He believes him?
No, he didn't fucking believe him. He's just a fucking douchebag. Robert then had Trina sue the town of Skidmore.
Oh, I was running in it.
For $6 million in damages.
Oh, he's like, I can get one more.
Uh-huh.
This bitch! He's the rat bitch!
He is the rat bitch,
oh,
for sure.
Oh my god.
Trina received $17,500. She did not receive the $6 million.
Okay, well, good for her.
I mean, I can't imagine the fucking town this one would have $6 million.
No.
Where's that coming from?
But, like, this poor woman.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's got a whole bevy of children hanging out.
So after she received this money, she packed up her life and fucking moved away with the kids. She's like, goodbye, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Which, good for her, honestly.
I know, those children do seem like they would be troubled.
Yeah, the kids are just like the bad part, for sure.
I know, so many sad children.
Okay, so this is the last bullet.
Oh!
Skidmore, Missouri is still known as the town that killed its bully. To this day, no one has come forward with a name of who fired a shot at Ken McElroy that day. The FBI did do an investigation, but that case was eventually closed. Vigilante justice is an incredibly slippery slope. Even the days after Ken was killed, some people shot Alice's kids in another town over because they were Ken's kids.
That's awful.
And they also burned down the McElroy farmhouse a few years later. So, it's not necessarily all good, right?
Right. So, yeah, it's a slippery slope.
Yeah. So, but this town had been let down time and time again by the justice system. They had been pushed to a brink of no return by a man that was no less than a monster. And sometimes you just have to push back. And that is the Ken McElroy story. Anyways, that's the end of that fucking story.
I loved it. Loved it.
It's fucking insane.
It's horrific.
It's horrific. This fucking town, I legitimately think they had no other choice.
I support their decision.
They're like, what else? Like,
No, you don't just get there.
No, like, you don't.
You don't, like, literally, we've been saying eat the rich for I don't know how long.
Yeah.
And you just really have to be pushed to a place where you're like, no, actually, I'm hungry.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, I am starved at this moment.
Mm-hmm. We're done with him.
Yeah. Yeah. And this town was just like, fuck this guy. Like, we're done. Like,
honestly, Lois was like, I'm not fucking putting up with your shit anymore.
Yeah. Or at all, really.
And everyone else was like, yeah. Also.
Yeah. She definitely started that, like, waterfall.
Also that. Yes.
It just, I don't know. Like, I'm not going to sit here and, like, pretend that vigilante justice is good. But in this case, it definitely seems like it was necessary.
We call it justice.
Yeah, right. But I mean, like, there's also people who think that, like, hate crimes against certain groups of people.
No, that's why it is a crime. Vigilante justice is a crime.
Yeah.
Because it's not up to you.
Yeah, but some people seem to be fucking taken down like a rabid dog. Mm-hmm. Just like...
Yeah, there was many opportunities that self-defense, which is not a crime.
Yeah.
Could have been stopped.
Yeah, but like... Bitch. Yeah, but
Yeah. Thank you.
The fucking wild case, right?
Yes.
Like, yeah. Yeah. We'll see you next week for some more bullshit on our end and another story.
Yeah, sorry it takes so long to get there, but I was on the edge of my seat when I let her speak.
That's good. That's good. I'm glad to hear it. Until next time.
Stay grimly curious.
Thank you so much for listening. For podcast updates and episode photos, be sure to follow us on Instagram at Grimly Podcast.
Also, be sure to rate and review our episodes, and we will see you next week for another episode.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No.